down the railroad track. It makes me feel so doggone blue to listen to that old smokestack. Drivers are rolling on, leaving me here behind. Give me back them good old days and let me ramble down the line. To hear the whistle blow, she's taking the sun and leaving the rain and making me want to go. I've got the blues, longing for her company. It's many miles where I am to the only one for me. It's so lonesome here, waiting for the manifest. I hope that engineer is kind enough to let me be his guest. Pound to me, take me everywhere I want to go, get my transportation free.
long steel rail and a short coast tie. I'm on my way back home. I'm on that train, the king of them all, that streamlined cannonball. She moves along like a cannonball, like star in its heavenly flight. The lonesome sound from the whistle you love as she travels through the night. Smile on the engineer's face, and although he's old and gray, a contented heart, he waits for his call on that streamlined cannonball. She moves along like a cannonball, like a star in its heavenly flight. The lonesome sound from the whistle you love as she travels through the night. You can see I ride them blinds. It's the life that I love, Lord, it's home, sweet home to me. She moves along like a cannonball, like a star in its heavenly flight. The lonesome sound from the whistle you love as she travels through the night.
Dave's former co-host used to talk about getting ducks in a row. That's kind of what we're doing right here at this instant. We're going to get things going in just a second.
This is Dave Monk of Prairie Monk, WEFT Champaign 90.1 on your FM dial.
And Dave on the board. This is the last Sunday of September, September the 29th. And this is the Prairie Monk program, WEFT's weekly look at rails, trails, greenways, conservation, and all the other things that Dave has been up to in the last week.
This week we had student eye help at Seymour and White Heath. We had a lot of debate about this area, and it revolves around cedar trees. And we're coming from two very different backgrounds. The preservation people are backed by biology. The planting of cedar trees is an engineering challenge at the other end. Put you in context, we're talking about rails, trails, and greenways. And in 1987, the main line closed out. The Railroad Museum retained 7 miles of intact rail, which it uses now, or has done for the last 30 years, a viable rail track. That track is contiguous with 4 miles of Hutland Pathways purchase between Whiteheath and Seymour. Between Seymour and Bonneville, there is 7 miles of rail that is intact. It has been abandoned, and we're working with the Federal Transportation Board and Canadian National with the hope that we can keep the rails intact. And the intent is to get historic trains from the Railroad Museum into Champaign. That will eventually be about 20 miles. It's regular country. It starts through the Cerro Gordo Moraine in Monticello. Well, the Cerro Gordo Moraine is the result of glaciation, continental glaciation. When the area melted, when ice melted, it dropped sand and gravel that had been transported locally from Canada, very good, rich glacial till, and that mound is left, and it's good for forest and to some extent for prairie. The forested areas are associated basically with the Sangamon River. The prairie areas are associated with the outwash plains or the backside of the moraine between Whiteheath and Champaign. The question is, do we have forest along the corridor to make it look more interesting for people who are using the train in the future? You have to know that we're putting together the skeletons. It's not likely to be a burgeoning historic railroad very quickly. We have to get steel for tracks, and we have to get ties for put on the ballast to support the steel. It'd be a slow process. In the meantime, that corridor can be used as a trail. We are next door to an interurban line, which is much lighter. The interurban line is 37 feet wide, and the main line is 100 feet wide. We do have power on both corridors. One is a main line with heavy stanchions, and the other is a more local line with wooden tower poles. It's important to know that the electricity is there. It is in hazard. If there are trees, then the electricity can short to the trees. They're old power lines. The stanchions were built in 1928, and their bottoms are rotting out. So there's going to be a replacement of those power lines. Part of the problem with the replacement is that there's a lot of activity of bobcats and cranes to put in the replacement poles.
Could you explain what those are? Those are actually animals that you'd find in this state, but you're talking about something else here.
A bobcat is like a small bulldozer with cleat tracks on them, and they can be used variously. They can be used to lift sand and gravel. They can be used to break up concrete. They're very handy little machine. They come in various sizes, and they're used to help make a corridor between poles. And I don't know how many poles you would have to a mile. I would suspect about 8. And so there's a temptation to run your equipment back and forth along that line. And that is very deleterious to the prairie there, because it disturbs us, because these tracks, especially if you're going to turn around, the mechanism is that you block one clea track and the other one skids around, and it makes a real mess. So we're in conversation with Ameren about that. And we're also aware that if we have trees on those corridors, then they may cause a short. So looking at these two sites, we have had a debate before the IHELP people came to put the history in background. You have to know that early settlement in the Monticello area was in all probability by boat up the Sangamon River from the Illinois River, from the Mississippi River. And that often was done when the water level was high enough to handle canoes or flat-bottom boats. There was a counterpart canal system, which didn't reach east central Illinois, but it did reach across from places like Chicago to the Quad Cities. It also has locks that allow you to lift a boat up over a hill and back down. So it was an innovation which didn't get to really express itself before rails came in. So when the rails came in, often they were going east-west to try to join the east and the west and to cross rivers like the Missouri and the Illinois and Mississippi. And that was quite a challenge. For quite some years, those corridors were completed by the train being put on punts and pulled across the corridor, or across the river to the other side. A painful process. Eventually, bridges would be made, but they weren't there early. So this line that we have is one of those lines that was heading west. It was not the Illinois Central, which came from north to south and was encouraged by state and federal people to settle various counties, including Champaign County. Champaign County was in the middle of a swampy area. It was largely outwashed plains. Places like Flatville were swampy. They had the semblance of rivers, but not much. So one of the techniques that was used was to put a dig a pond at what you thought was the top of the river, and then gradually put in a pontoon, a flat area which was floating on the pond, and then on that pontoon you put a dragline crane. It's a crane that has a bucket, and you would create a river by taking the mullock that was in front of you out, and that pond would move down the river, and you would try to follow the natural terrain, and that was an attempt to get water off here. That was often done by Frieslanders and Deutschlanders who were familiar with draining in Europe and looked at this as a potential for agriculture, and it was. And eventually when this fields were drained, this became one of the more productive parts of Illinois. The farmers at the same time were encouraged to put in ceramic tiles, you would find a brick place somewhere where there was clay of a reasonable nature for being sculpted, and you would make small pipes. They're about a foot long, and water can get into this pipe and drain out. They're under most all of the agricultural fields. These days, they're replaced by plastic drains with holes in them. But basically, you were getting the water off. There would be no agriculture if this didn't happen. So going back to the history, we had people coming by boat, people coming by train. Most of the early settlers came by the railroad line that the I-Help people were working on. It was a main line. If you wanted to go to St. Louis, it stopped at various designated places, but nowhere else. That was the only line for many years. As oxen and horses got bogged down on these roads, they were improved, but they invariably followed the railroad line. So as you go out Route 10, which is Springfield Avenue continued, you find the road basically following the railroad line. The railroad line sometimes took a dip away to enable them to go down the landscape and across the Sangamon River and up the other side. This was a technique that saved a lot of construction excavation, and you would have little creeks running off the moraine, and you would have to put in several culverts as you went down to the river, and then a truss bridge across the river, and then up the other side. If you were heavy laden with a freight train, you had to make sure that you got enough momentum going down to get up the other side, because when you got the other side, it was a pain if you couldn't quite make it. You had to break the train in two and take pieces to a nearby siding, and then go back and get the other and join them up, and so it would mean a day delay in getting a train through. So we're in an area where we have the Sangamon River. Lodge Park is a representative of that area. Shady Rest also. Lodge Park was a donation, and it has some evergreen trees. Evergreen trees were planted for like pine and whatnot, for wood, because there was very little wood in these areas. The prairie didn't have many trees. It had cottonwoods, which had roots that could go down into the aquifers, but it was basically prairie, 94% prairie. Piatt County is probably more forested because the moraine allows drainage. The railroads allow drainage also. They won't go across a swamp without their well drained. And that drainage encourages trees to grow. Most of the trees we have don't like to be sitting in water. They like water, but they don't like a lot of it. And bold cypress, if you're in the south, is attuned to that and has roots that come up and provide for aeration. So in Monticello, we have the Sangamon River dominant, with forest on either side, and part of the Railroad Museum is on the Cerro Gordo Moraine, and that is forested area. The 4 miles between the terminus of the Monticello Railroad Museum and the Heartland Pathways area is a prime candidate for getting trains into Champaign, historic trains. So we worked together, the railroad engineers who have put together the Monticello Railroad Museum. It's a very popular place to visit. It's got lots of equipment, and it's taken many generations of people to put this together. So this is no small effort. And the Monticello Railroad Museum has recently bought additional land so that they can expand. And even at the moment, they're a national level railroad museum. So at that end, we have the attempt to improve the line. If you are a recreationist, then you want people to see something or do something on the way. And if you're going to bring a historic train from Monticello to Champaign, it can be between 20 and 25 miles. And if you have a small family of children, the first couple of miles are interesting, but after that, boredom can come in. So you have interesting things to happen. You can have the train invaded by actors, and you can have an elevator that demonstrates what an old wooden elevator was like. You can have prairie. Now, the prairie doesn't look very interesting. It looks like weeds, as we've often said. And this is what was the ecosystem, though. So our debate this week has been about whether we should artificialize that corridor or allow it to be nature. Not an easy debate. The engineers who unfortunately don't have a lot of background in biology would like to have a row of fast-growing trees on that corridor. And the fast-growing tree which is most available is a cedar tree. And like a number of our prairie creatures or ecosystems, cedar trees are somewhat native. It depends on what ecosystem you're looking at. But it's sometimes we're faced with our own native plants getting a little out of hand. And cedar trees are a beauty. They grow very quickly. They create an atmosphere. So the attitude here from the engineering point of view is to have something other than a prairie to look at. A forest is helpful. But most serious forest trees take a long while to grow. Cedar trees grow quickly. Unfortunately, they take a lot of water. They take space. And they invade the native vegetation. The native vegetation is not the best because once you had some drainage on either side of the ballast of a railroad, then the plants could come in, the trees could come in. So if it's left for 30 years, then the trees can be 6 inches wide. If you want to have a see-through forest, then cedar trees are very inviting. They're used extensively in horticulture. You will see cedar trees all around town or all across the United States. If you go on the web, you can learn how to buy them, $20 or $30 for a foot-high plant. And they're rough and tough. And It takes a few years and they're 4 feet high. Take a few more years and they're going to seed and spread. I'm not quite sure of the mechanism, but it seems like the seed is attractive to birds. When we go to work with cedar trees, we find birds' nests in them. So I Help is willing to help us. We at the biological end and the engineers at the White Heath end. It's kind of historic territory. The White family is still in Monticello area. The Heath family is in that general area too. So we're not only talking about historic trains, we're talking about a historic community. And you do have the opportunity to put in quick growing trees. One of them is a Bartlett pear, which can grow very fast. The cedar is not the only thing that grows fast, but it's the one that is commonly available because it spreads. And whether it spreads by seeds that are eaten by meadow voles or whether it's by birds, they're ubiquitous. And so I've been having a long conversation about the salvage and planting of cedar trees. I've also been going to the internet to assure myself that this is indeed an invasive plant. So you have to think about Allerton Park, Lodge Park, Shady Rest, and these are all natural areas that can be invaded by this tree. Admittedly, there have been plantings of pine trees previously, but that was when we didn't have many trees to make things like railroad ties, and the attempt was to grow trees in a forested situation. And they're very popular. People get married in the pine forest, and that's okay. It's part of our history. But to continue that with cedar trees is, for me, an anathema. So the bus that delivered the I Help people, part of the team that came to the biology end were removing cedar trees. And we can remove them in various ways. One of them is to have a controlled burn. They don't like to be burned, and they have enough rosin in them. And when they are burned, they burn very like sparklers. So they can be a little bit of a fire hazard if you have a lot of them. So while we were taking out cedar trees, the engineers were planting cedar trees, and we haven't solved this problem yet. And you might think about how you would want to solve it. The trees at the moment are being planted near to where there is forested area, but these trees can invade forest. So if we're looking 200 years down the line, are we going to have a cedar forest? And I think it's rather cruel to plant cedars at this time and do it for ambiance, when really the people who are traveling that corridor should realize that this is an ecosystem. So what's on either side of the railroad bed is prairie. And even though it's a little boring and a little weedy, it's our heritage. The state has managed to preserve formally 0.01% of the remnant prairie that was here, the original prairie. That means that we have very little original prairie It's almost endangered as an ecosystem. And all the bacteria and fungi in the soils have been depleted. So our sites along the railroad line are one of the few remaining prairie sites. It's not easy to maintain the purity of that prairie. We have some parts that have not been plowed. But you have to realize that there's two railroad lines there, and they use herbicide heavily to control trees. And they have a cocktail that will control tree emergence for 3 years. So you have to actually be very aware that that also takes out the prairie that you bought the railroad for. And so how do we balance the development against the tradition of heritage? I wondered and wrote a diatribe for the students that were coming to discuss that issue. I feel that it's helpful to have two groups on the same bus with totally different paradigms. We had the problem that there was a rain front coming through. It came through on Thursday, Friday, and Friday night. So there was a chance that we weren't going to be able to go because we don't have a place to this alternative for a rain situation. It's kind of wet to work with. So our default was to not go, but on Saturday morning, the sun came out, it rained overnight, and it was possible to do things. But it curtailed the number of people that were coming to some extent. We were supposed to have two shifts, one with 14 people that had pre-registered, and one with 11. But it turned out that the first shift came with three people, and the second shift came with four people. So instead of having 21 people, we had seven. But you can still do a lot of work. We also have a great deal of difficulty about buses coming and finding the site. Kindly, the IHOP administrators drove out to the site to make sure where it was and to tell the bus driver where and to have a leader of the groups to know where. There was some debate about whether it should be at 9 o'clock or 9:30, and that confused the issue a little bit. I was there by 9:15, and the bus was already there. I come back and done a little research, and I have a couple of papers here, and David has a copy there. One is about cedar tree removal. Cedar trees are considered an invasive species in many areas. They spread and grow quickly, stealing water from other plants and shading and killing many grasses at the same time. Cedar trees are not particularly difficult to cut down with a chainsaw, but once cut, the stump must be ground out because it completely grows suckers and they will quickly sprout. And then I have another one where it gets even more difficult because these cedar trees take over pastures. And in this case, the paper that I pulled is Winning War on Invasive Cedar Trees. Farmstead Forest Tackling Eastern Red Cedar and Other Invasive Trees and Shrubs on Rangeland should take the right mechanical tools. And they're suggesting Bobcat, which I was talking to you about before, with special equipment on it. And so it goes on to say, across U.S. grazing lands, eastern red cedar trees continue to invade quality rangeland, native to many regions and found in 37 states. They are known to withstand soil and climate conditions ranging from boggy swamps to arid ridges. The loss of grazing lands and encroachment of cedar trees outside of useful windbreaks are swallowing up pastures, soaking up precious soil moisture, and choking out native hardwood forest lands has not gone unnoticed. Thanks to a combination of diligent control measures that include prescribed fire, chemical and mechanical treatments, red cedar expansion in some states, like Nebraska, has surprisingly reversed by 10% or nearly 40,000 acres since 2011. But the reversal against this long-term invasion foe has not been accidental. It has taken persistence on the side of farmers, ranchers, landowners to get it done. And so on, it goes on. And we're in the same position. We're natural history people, but we have the same aim as to maintain the native vegetation, which is more biodiverse. And so when we were taking out these trees, underneath the trees were the ceanothus or New Jersey tea that we pick at this time of the year as an endangered species, or not necessarily endangered, but a very useful plant in prairie propagation and artificial prairies where you're recreating a prairie. So the students that came were given an idea of what the prairie looks like. We have a corridor that is on our main line, which we have built the right of way, which hasn't been disturbed. And so there the plants are growing, they're biodiverse. And even the cedar trees will have problems getting in because a natural prairie is fairly strong in its own right. But they were using loppers to remove the trees. To a certain point, leftover stump is rather thick, so we were using a bayonet saw to chop that stump down so that it doesn't sprout. And it does sprout. If you've got that much root established, then that happens. Then we were picking seed. And that's not easy to do because the plants are distributed. David's been out there with this sort of thing. And then the other alternative we had is a huge plant area of Phragmites. It's a tall, sometimes... It's in the family of reed canary grass, and it has got a plume of seeds on the top, almost 6 inches long and loaded with seed. It's on the roadside. It's on our prairie. And mowing people who mow the roadside often will mow it down in a genuine attempt to reduce its viability. But what happens if you mow it at this time of the year? It's going to go all over the place. So our modest attempt to reduce this volume is to take those heads, put them into plastic bags, and then take them to a burn pile, which usually is not on our prairie, but that gets rid of the seed. We don't like to do something like put them in a dumpster and send them to the landfill, because then they have a problem. So those are the three tasks that the iHelpers were engaged in, and I think they enjoyed doing that. They could see the difference between two forms of mowing. The prairie itself is not mown. We do burn it from time to time. But the adjacent 37 feet is of interurban corridor is owned by Norfolk Southern, and it has an easement for local electricity. And it's not Norfolk Southern mowed it, but it's been mown about 2 months ago. So the plants that are growing on the interurban at the moment are way back off being mature. So you take a group of students there, they can see the plants that are flowering, like quinine and dock and liatris, and those sorts of plants are there growing as young plants, whereas just across the 37 feet to the right-of-way, and the plants are mature, they've gone to seed, not all of them. So we've been talking about this to the Department of Transportation, and it suggests that some of the mowing should be done with caution. If your Canada thistle is going to come to head in May and it gets mowed in August, then you're going to have gazillion seeds floating around not only your natural area but the farmland around. There's some sense to, if you're going to have a state that is wanting to have more interesting roadsides and natural history, then you need less of the mowing and more of individual understanding of species. But we're in a state that has very little knowledge of its prairies. If you ask someone where a prairie is, they may not even know. And if you find someone who does know, they probably can't tell you more than 10 of the 110 species of prairie that could be there. So we have a drive to not put trails through these areas that are only recreational. We want people who understand that the what was on either side of the ballast was a real prairie. And we have 4 miles of such prairie outside Allerton Park. It's between the west side of Monticello and Armenia and Cisco. It has another invasive creature. It's an autumn olive. And the Department of Conservation, as it was then called, decided this would be a good bird strip. It has interesting olive seeds on it, and birds love it. And so originally, when they planted a forest, they would plant the autumn olive between. Well, it's done very well, and the seeds are very nice, and the birds love them, but then they go and crap them everywhere else. So now that tree is well known in the Midwest. It's an invasive weed tree. So it's something in the same category as the cedar tree. The cedar tree is not quite as dominant as the autumn olive, but both of them require, if you're in a natural area situation, a constant responsibility to get rid of these plants, because they can go into other natural areas like Allerton Park or Lodge Park or Shady Rest and destroy them. It seems natural, but it's an overgrowth of one particular prairie part of this ecology. If you had 20,000 acres of prairie and you had some cedar trees, they'd be dotted here and there. But if they took over a little portion, it wouldn't be taking over the lot. There often is some control mechanism, especially if you have a very healthy prairie. They can't always complete, but so we haven't solved this problem yet, and we do get to bring historic trains into Champaign. It will be interesting to see what emanates on the side of the railroad bed, and we'll have to deal with the responsibility that we have for controlling our own weeds. And so these are weed trees, and so Tom Scott from the Champaign, Havana, and Western Historic Railroad, which is what we're trying to rerail, is debating with me, Heartland Pathways, which owns the land and gives the historic railroad an easement. We're both wanting to see that happen, and it's more people than just two of us. From an ecological point of view, we don't want to see that plant move into other ecological centers. It's interesting. We have been working with this for probably 5 years now, and there's a lot of regulations that go on. You have to be working with the Surface Transportation Board, which is the federal government's transportation board. And it has a Rail Banking Act, which we talk about a lot, and that is an agreement for bicyclists and biologists and rerailers to save railroad beds. So the very popular Kickapoo Trail, the first 7 miles, is in use at the present time. We appreciate that, but its width is 10 feet wide, and that's more than you need for passing bicycles. It's very nice to be able to put two or three bicycles together, parallel to each other, instead of in chain. But you have to realize that takes out some of the only prairie that we have for locals. It's not the world's greatest prairie, because there's disturbance from roadside, there's disturbance from railroads, there's invasion of farm weeds. So when we ask for a narrower trail, we were talking to about this last week, and David was saying that there ought to be at least a 6-foot trail. And well, that's understandable, but to go through an area that is very good remnant prairie is to some of us quite an anathema. So we look for alternative routes through an adjacent road or some other way of doing things. So what we can do with the 20 mile of bed that we're looking at is an important debate. In some cases, we're lucky that the power lines move off the railroad bed and move in other circles, and that gives us some really remnant prairie. Where the roadside and the railroad is wide, then we cherish that also. And there's a sample of that between Rantoul and Paxton. So how do you go about debating this issue without treading on traditional toes and maintaining the dignity of the ecosystem, which is almost endangered? It means that you probably have to be out there politicking. And that's kind of a difficult challenge for most people. And most people don't understand this. So if I go to city meetings, I'm talking to city discussions that are where people can come in for assisted support for industry and business. But the vast population doesn't know the small rules and regulations, and they also don't always read master documents. So it behooves us to get out there with information, and I talked to David a little bit about this, but that population often gets their information from comics and novels that are largely pictorial. So what we're doing with visual cameras, with the help of Banner Free television. We're giving the visual part, and so when I was at the city meeting on Tuesday night, I was speaking this, and some council people were speaking to it too. In order to get to the wee folk, little folk, we need to be heavy on visual material, and that has happened with the internet, and this means that more people are getting to know more people, more information about their physical and ecological landscape. And I think that's enough for now. It's this Dave Monk, your Prairie Monk, WEFT, Champaign 90.1 on your FM dial.
And Dave on the board. As always, the views and opinions expressed here are solely those of the speakers and no one else. It's coming up on noon. You're tuned to WEFT, Champaign 90.1 FM. It's time now for Shruti Music of India, and we are community radio for East Central Illinois.